This is the 2010 WAIS examination in English as an additional language or dialect. Stage 3, Section 1, Listening. You will hear two texts. Each text will be played twice. There will be a short pause between the first and second readings. You may make notes at any time and answer the questions in the spaces provided in your question-answer booklet. Text 1 will begin in 2 minutes. Use this time to read the questions for Text 1. Text 1. Interview with an exchange student. First reading.
I am the first voice you will hear. I am the interviewer.
I am the second voice you will hear. I am Catherine, the exchange student.
Nowadays, it's very common for young people to complete some of their studies in another part of the world. Today, we will hear one such student reflecting on her foreign adventure.
Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, Catherine, and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Tell us about the degree you chose after you left school.
Well, after I finished school, I wanted to do a communication studies degree. I figured I would be able to get the marks I needed to get into an arts degree, and at the time I wanted to become a journalist. But when the results came out, I got a much higher score than I expected and decided to combine law with communication studies for a more challenging and varied degree.
Now, Catherine, I understand that you went on an exchange program through your university, and where did you go?
I went to Ottawa, which is the capital city of Canada, and spent one semester there.
Why did you choose Canada?
Well, I had previously visited Canada and loved the country and people, so I decided that was where I wanted to do the exchange. As I also speak some French, I wanted to go to a French-speaking or bilingual part of the country.
Did you know much about the area before you went?
No, I knew nothing about Ottawa before I left, except what I had researched during the exchange application process.
What expectations did you have before you went?
I was expecting just to have fun and learn some new things.
You mentioned earlier that you speak French, so there were no language problems for you, were there?
No, none that I came across. The city is bilingual, although Canadian French is quite different from the traditional French I had learnt at school and university. In Ottawa, some people only spoke English and some only spoke French. If they knew you were a native English speaker, they would speak to you in English rather than in French.
Now, you mentioned that Ottawa is bilingual. How does that work?
Well, both French and English are the official languages of Canada. Ottawa is a bilingual area, which means that just about everything written is written both in French and English. In Quebec, on the other hand, the majority of the people speak French. So when I visited that area, I tried to speak French, and I think they appreciated that.
What about the people? How did you find them when you first arrived? And how do they identify themselves culturally?
I found that the people there were very similar to Australians, in that they were friendly and laid back and had a similarly relaxed attitude to life. Some people in Ottawa only spoke English, so they saw themselves very much as Canadian. However, there is a separatist movement in Quebec where a small group of the population want to become independent and form their own nation. In that sense, I suppose they define themselves as Quebecois rather than as French-speaking Canadian.
How would you compare student life in Canada with student life here in Australia?
Well, firstly, I think Canadian students are forced to mature at a much younger age than Australians. For example, it is customary for North Americans to leave home to go to university, and that usually means relocating to another part of the country. They spend their first year in university housing and then move on to their own accommodation, but they rarely move back home throughout the course of their degree. So they really have to learn to stand on their own two feet. In Australia, on the other hand, the majority of students live at home for the duration of their degree and usually stay in their home city. Another difference I found was that there are a lot more organised events for universities in Canada. Hazing and introducing freshers, first-year students, to university life is a very big thing over there compared to here.
Hazing? What does that mean?
That's a sort of initiation activity for the various clubs and sororities.
I see. Now, thinking about the formal part of your studies, what units did you study and why did you choose these units?
I studied international law, wrongful convictions, charities, and medicine and the law. I chose these units for different reasons. Three of them I found extremely interesting and wanted to learn about. The fourth I chose because I couldn't get any of my preferences for my final subject, so I just picked a unit that my friends were doing.
How did you find those units?
I found them very challenging. I wasn't familiar at all with any of the subjects, and I certainly wasn't familiar with Canadian law. It was also confusing because I didn't know the different states or provinces in Canada, and there are different laws or precedents across the provinces. In particular, one of my units, wrongful convictions, was incredibly interesting and rewarding as I found Canada a much more progressive country than Australia, particularly in terms of social justice.
What were your best and worst experiences during your time in Canada?
I think I really only had good experiences, although coming from Western Australia, I found the very short days and extremely cold weather hard to deal with at first. In fact, I had never seen snow in my life, so that was a great thrill for me, and I got to have some great snowball fights. I also made some really good lifelong friends. I got to do a lot of travelling and had some really unique experiences.
Overall, how did the trip benefit you personally, and would you recommend this sort of experience to other students?
Well, the trip really opened my eyes to what it's like to live and study in another country, and was undoubtedly one of the best experiences of my life. And yes, I would definitely recommend it to other students.
Thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Text 1, Second Reading.
Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, Catherine, and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Tell us about the degree you chose after you left school.
Well, after I finished school, I wanted to do a communication studies degree. I figured I would be able to get the marks I needed to get into an arts degree. And at the time, I wanted to become a journalist. But when the results came out, I got a much higher score than I expected and decided to combine law with communication studies for a more challenging and varied degree.
Now, Catherine, I understand that you went on an exchange program through your university, and where did you go?
I went to Ottawa, which is the capital city of Canada, and spent one semester there.
Why did you choose Canada?
Well, I had previously visited Canada and loved the country and people, so I decided that was where I wanted to do the exchange. As I also speak some French, I wanted to go to a French-speaking or bilingual part of the country.
Did you know much about the area before you went?
No, I knew nothing about Ottawa before I left, except what I had researched during the exchange application process.
What expectations did you have before you went?
I was expecting just to have fun and learn some new things.
You mentioned earlier that you speak French, so there were no language problems for you, were there?
No, none that I came across. The city is bilingual, although Canadian French is quite different from the traditional French I had learnt at school and university. In Ottawa, some people only spoke English and some only spoke French. If they knew you were a native English speaker, they would speak to you in English rather than in French.
Now, you mentioned that Ottawa is bilingual. How does that work?
Well, both French and English are the official languages of Canada. Ottawa is a bilingual area, which means that just about everything written is written both in French and English. In Quebec, on the other hand, the majority of the people speak French. So when I visited that area, I tried to speak French, and I think they appreciated that.
What about the people? How did you find them when you first arrived? And how do they identify themselves culturally?
I found that the people there were very similar to Australians in that they were friendly and laid back and had a similarly relaxed attitude to life. Some people in Ottawa only spoke English, so they saw themselves very much as Canadian. However, there is a separatist movement in Quebec where a small group of the population want to become independent and form their own nation. In that sense, I suppose they define themselves as Quebecois rather than as French-speaking Canadian.
How would you compare student life in Canada with student life here in Australia?
Well, firstly, I think Canadian students are forced to mature at a much younger age than Australians. For example, it is customary for North Americans to leave home to go to university, and that usually means relocating to another part of the country. They spend their first year in university housing and then move on to their own accommodation, but they rarely move back home throughout the course of their degree. So they really have to learn to stand on their own two feet. In Australia, on the other hand, the majority of students live at home for the duration of their degree and usually stay in their home city. Another difference I found was that there are a lot more organised events for universities in Canada. Hazing and introducing freshers, first-year students, to university life is a very big thing over there compared to here.
Hazing? What does that mean?
That's a sort of initiation activity for the various clubs and sororities.
I see. Now, thinking about the formal part of your studies, what units did you study and why did you choose these units?
I studied international law, wrongful convictions, charities, and medicine and the law. I chose these units for different reasons. Three of them I found extremely interesting and wanted to learn about. The fourth I chose because I couldn't get any of my preferences for my final subject, so I just picked a unit that my friends were doing.
How did you find those units?
I found them very challenging. I wasn't familiar at all with any of the subjects, and I certainly wasn't familiar with Canadian law. It was also confusing because I didn't know the different states or provinces in Canada, and there are different laws or precedents across the provinces. In particular, one of my units, wrongful convictions, was incredibly interesting and rewarding as I found Canada a much more progressive country than Australia, particularly in terms of social justice.
What were your best and worst experiences during your time in Canada?
I think I really only had good experiences, although coming from Western Australia, I found the very short days and extremely cold weather hard to deal with at first. In fact, I had never seen snow in my life, so that was a great thrill for me, and I got to have some great snowball fights. I also made some really good lifelong friends. I got to do a lot of travelling and had some really unique experiences.
Overall, how did the trip benefit you personally, And would you recommend this sort of experience to other students?
Well, the trip really opened my eyes to what it's like to live and study in another country and was undoubtedly one of the best experiences of my life. And yes, I would definitely recommend it to other students.
Thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now answer the questions for text one. Text 2 will begin in 2 minutes. Use this time to read the questions for text 2. Text 2. Australia, no island. First reading. I am the first voice you will hear. I am the presenter.
I am the second voice you will hear. I am Emile Frison, the Director General of Biodiversity International.
This year, 2010, has been nominated by the United Nations as the International Year of Biodiversity. The following presentation was delivered by Mr. Emile Frison, who is the Director General of Biodiversity International. The talk was presented on the program Perspectives, broadcast on ABC Radio National on the 30th of January 2008.
In agriculture, one of the few things we can be assured of is that circumstances will change. New pests and diseases, new markets, new weather patterns, and even entirely new climates. In this respect, as in most things to do with food and agriculture, no country is an island, and certainly not Australia. People have always taken their crops, livestock, and foods with them as they crisscross the globe, while threats such as climate change and pests and diseases recognise no international boundaries. Luckily, the resources to combat these threats and rise to the opportunities are also globally available. Australia offers two perfect examples. A few weeks ago, banana growers in the Northern Territory again drew the attention of the press to the devastating effect of Panama disease. In the 1950s, this disease almost wiped out the global commercial banana industry until one variety, Cavendish, was found to be resistant, and that variety now utterly dominates the market. The bad news about the recent outbreak in the Northern Territory and several similar ones over the past few years is that it is a new strain of Panama disease, one that kills Cavendish. It has already decimated much of the industry in the Northern Territory and Western Australia, and in several countries in Asia, and represents a dangerous threat to the main banana growing areas in Queensland. At the moment, there is no cure, and if one is to be found, it will come from international research collaboration. The Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research knows this, which is why it has been funding a project to investigate the fungus that causes Panama disease and how best to manage it. Lessons learned will be useful wherever bananas are grown, but more is needed. The search for resistant varieties requires gene banks, breeders, and extensive trials of candidate varieties, all of which could use more support. There are other diseases too. UG99 is a new strain of wheat stem rust, isolated in Uganda in 1999. It is making its way eastwards around the world, and all of the widely grown wheat varieties are susceptible. Eventually, it will reach Australia to add to wheat farmers' woes here. One solution is fungicides. But this is not necessarily a sustainable solution in Australia, and certainly not for the hundreds of thousands of small farmers across temperate Asia who grow wheat as their main subsistence and cash crop. For all wheat farmers, the hunt is on for resistant varieties, and as with bananas, the search will require international collaboration and access to biodiversity. Help is quite likely to come from a wild relative of wheat. It often has done in the past. Again, Australian researchers recognise the need. 2 years ago, the Grains Research and Development Corporation helped train a young scientist from Georgia to screen the wild wheats of her native country for rust resistance genes. She gained the experience to use modern molecular tools, and she left behind many samples of wild wheat relatives that could form the basis of a breeding program here. similar training exchanges will help address perhaps the most pressing problem facing agriculture in Australia and the rest of the world, and that's climate change. We can confidently predict that the hottest seasons of recent years will be among the coldest seasons of the next few decades. A detailed forecast currently being undertaken at Biodiversity International is mapping the changes in areas suitable for growing the most important crops and shows there are winners and losers. Australia, especially Northern Australia, may well be a net loser. Coping with this is going to require all the ingenuity and all the diversity we can come up with. The recent World Bank report on agriculture, the 2008 World Development Report titled Agriculture for Development, pointed out that greater investment in agriculture is the most effective weapon with which to fight poverty in developing countries, and that agricultural research is essential for sustainable agriculture. Australia was one of the first big contributors to the Global Crop Diversity Trust, which aims to safeguard the world's most important gene bank collections forever. Australia is also an important contributor to agricultural research for development. But there are also selfish reasons for doing more. It will help Australia's own farmers to deal with the challenges they face.
Text 2, Second Reading. This year, 2010, has been nominated by the United Nations as the International Year of Biodiversity. The following presentation was delivered by Mr. Emile Frison, who is the Director General of Biodiversity International. The talk was presented on the program Perspectives, broadcast on ABC Radio National on the 30th of January 2008.
In agriculture, one of the few things we can be assured of is that circumstances will change. New pests and diseases, new markets, new weather patterns, and even entirely new climates. In this respect, as in most things to do with food and agriculture, no country is an island, and certainly not Australia. People have always taken their crops, livestock, and foods with them as they crisscross the globe, while threats such as climate change and pests and diseases recognise no international boundaries. Luckily, the resources to combat these threats and rise to the opportunities are also globally available. Australia offers two perfect examples. A few weeks ago, banana growers in the Northern Territory again drew the attention of the press to the devastating effect of Panama disease. In the 1950s, this disease almost wiped out the global commercial banana industry until one variety, Cavendish, was found to be resistant, and that variety now utterly dominates the market. The bad news about the recent outbreak in the Northern Territory and several similar ones over the past few years is that it is a new strain of Panama disease, one that kills Cavendish. It has already decimated much of the industry in the Northern Territory and Western Australia, and in several countries in Asia, and represents a dangerous threat to the main banana growing areas in Queensland. At the moment, there is no cure, and if one is to be found, it will come from international research collaboration. The Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research knows this, which is why it has been funding a project to investigate the fungus that causes Panama disease and how best to manage it. Lessons learned will be useful wherever bananas are grown, but more is needed. The search for resistant varieties requires gene banks, breeders, and extensive trials of candidate varieties, all of which could use more support. There are other diseases too. UG99 is a new strain of wheat stem rust, isolated in Uganda in 1999. It is making its way eastwards around the world, and all of the widely grown wheat varieties are susceptible. Eventually, it will reach Australia to add to wheat farmers' woes here. One solution is fungicides, but this is not necessarily a sustainable solution in Australia, and certainly not for the hundreds of thousands of small farmers across temperate Asia who grow wheat as their main subsistence and cash crop. For all wheat farmers, the hunt is on for resistant varieties, and as with bananas, the search will require international collaboration and access to biodiversity. Help is quite likely to come from a wild relative of wheat. It often has done in the past. Again, Australian researchers recognise the need. 2 years ago, the Grains Research and Development Corporation helped train a young scientist from Georgia to screen the wild wheats of her native country for rust resistance genes. She gained the experience to use modern molecular tools, and she left behind many samples of wild wheat relatives that could form the basis of a breeding program here. Similar training exchanges will help address perhaps the most pressing problem facing agriculture in Australia and the rest of the world, and that's climate change. We can confidently predict that the hottest seasons of recent years will be among the coldest seasons of the next few decades. A detailed forecast currently being undertaken at Biodiversity International is mapping the changes in areas suitable for growing the most important crops and shows there are winners and losers. Australia, especially Northern Australia, may well be a net loser. Coping with this is going to require all the ingenuity and all the diversity we can come up with. The recent World Bank report on agriculture, the 2008 World Development Report titled Agriculture for Development, pointed out that greater investment in agriculture is the most effective weapon with which to fight poverty in developing countries, and that agricultural research is essential for sustainable agriculture. Australia was one of the first big contributors to the Global Crop Diversity Trust, which aims to safeguard the world's most important gene bank collections forever. Australia is also an important contributor to agricultural research for development, but there are also selfish reasons for doing more. It will help Australia's own farmers to deal with the challenges they face.
This is the end of Section 1. You may continue with the rest of the paper. Supervisors, please turn off the sound equipment.